This is The Producers with Ryan Dreen, a podcast designed for radio imaging, commercial production, all things audio. Feedback is encouraged at ryanontheradio.com.
All right, welcome to our 21st episode. Steve Sykes is going to be the guest coming up here in just a little bit. As always, I want to thank you for checking out the podcast. I'm not going to talk too much, because I think my throat is going down the toilet. And I got to talk for a living. Just does not make that good. Also, because there's a whole lot of podcasts this time. I actually did a lot of editing, cut it down from, I think we ended with like an hour and 15 minutes. I believe I got it chopped down to like a 25-minute and a 27-minute segment, something like that. So, anyway, I wanted to just tell you, though, what you're going to have in each part here so that you don't have your time wasted in case you aren't particularly interested in something we may or may not be talking about. So, if you're interested in Steve Sykes, which hopefully that's one of the main reasons you're here, part one's definitely going to be cool because we're going to talk about his background. We're going to talk also in generalities about radio imaging and then his move into the radio jingle world. And then really I kind of cut it hard that on part two we just jump right into super tech speak, and not only do you get the super like detailed tech speak, which should also be pretty valuable to like the voiceovers of the world and whatnot, but we also get into the real jingle talk. You know, we go away from producing radio imaging per se to speaking in detail about producing music and jingles for radio. Also, Steve's wife, Melody, is a very solid voiceover artist, and she was there. So we brought her on and talked about the relationship between, you know, voice chick and prod guy. And that's only a couple minutes there near the end of the second segment. And then Steve gave me a little surprise, and it is at the very end of part two's interview, if you're interested in hearing what that is. I think I make reference to it at some point. I can't remember now when in the interview. But anyway, I'll play that at the end. And two more things to tell you. A new feature. I've retained, there was a guy, Gavin, who's in Utah. He got mentioned in the last episode. He's a youngster in the field. I think he's like 9. And he's doing radio production already. He's working with Pat Garrett, who was my last guest. He's actually more like, he's at least 12. I had him do the review of the week. So we'll get into that later. But that, I'm only going to give you a sample of that. That'll happen at the end of part two. But the entire review can be found on the website. And speaking of the website, it's brand new. If you're on my email list, then you got the email telling you it's brand new. I've been sort of, what would you call it, a soft launch? I didn't really tell a lot of people at first. I just wanted to see if it worked. It seems to be working. The main things to note now are there's a whole lot more content with the podcast. There's a new category, which is the podcast show notes. Everything is easier to find because before I had it all on that one page, which went on forever. Trust me, I knew how absurd it was. It was just I had no easy way with that other site to fix it. So now I simply can do everything individually. The search function works so much better. You can find every episode instantly, and the feed for the podcast should give you like the past 10 or 15 episodes, but then separate podcast entries will be the show notes. So everything should be a lot easier to manage. The other thing I wanted to point out, I mean, there's a whole lot going on there, but the other thing is the comments section, primarily for each episode, I think is where the value will be. If you go there and make a comment, I do have quite a bit of traffic coming by the site, checking out the podcast and the show notes. If you have a question about something, you can try leaving it there, and either I can answer it, the guest can answer it, or one of the visitors to the site who happens to know the answer can visit it. So I'm hoping the site sort of acts like its own forum in a way. I'm not going to set up a forum yet where you can do specific topics, but you know, based on each episode, there'll be forum type deals there. So hopefully you'll utilize that, and I just hope it's a little extra value for people to learn about production and whatnot. Yeah, my voice is it's in pain, so I hope there's nothing else I needed to say. Visit the website. Please check it out. Send me an email and tell me what you think of it, or use the contact form there, because I do want it to be valuable, and it's also my business. Well, part of my business, so, you know, I'd like it to be good and stuff. Without further ado, we start off with audio unlike that which we have heard in the past from Mr. Steve
Sipes.
And yep, we're started off a little different than normal. You heard an excellent sampling of Hook's jingles from the one and only Steve Sipes. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Now,
I feel like I should sing it to you.
Well, maybe. Wait, do I have a special surprise coming my way?
No. Oh, you do. You do. Yes, you do. Actually, yeah, you do.
Yes. So, so this interview is good for the world and extra good for me. But I'll deal with that special surprise some other time. So we don't start off with your standard radio imaging production or just a voiceover demo. We start off with a jingle demo, but pretty much stuff that people may not have ever really heard before. And that's kind of your main business. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I do, man. It's called Hooks by Steve Sipes. We started it a few years ago. I've actually been doing that type of work since 2000 when I was working at KSLZ in St. Louis. But you know, I'm kind of the guy that makes the jingles that don't sound like jingles, mm-hmm. the stuff that sounds more like, you know, pop music and pop country, and that's kind of what I do now. I'm more of a music guy these days than I am really an imaging guy per se. But I love it. It's always been a passion of mine doing music, so it was a nice change for me.
Yeah, it definitely shows when people hear what you're doing. I wanted to do this real quick. Now, I know you don't actually have a ton of content on your site, but I did want to let people just meander around your website while we're talking so they have something else to do.
Yeah, it's one of those things that has just been severely neglected, and we're actually, that's a goal 2010. We're going to get new sites up for both radiosykes.com, which is kind of like my personal site, mm-hmm. and Hooks by stevesykes.com, which is just a place where I have some demos of some of the Hooks stuff that we've done for stations all around the country and overseas and Canada, whatever. But yeah, those are the two sites for now.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter, of course. You can find me on Twitter. Actually, I'm not even going to get into Twitter because I've got like 80 Twitter accounts.
Oh, so. Really? You're not just like at Radio Sipes?
Or? No. Well, you know, it's funny. I've got Radio Sipes on Twitter, but that's like my kind of just where I talk about, you know, work stuff. And then I've got I Am Steve Sipes, which is no work. It's just, that's just me.
Okay.
Just, you know,
your pontifications of the
that's
world.
That's where I go to embarrass myself,
yeah.
And, you know, sometimes vent, sometimes that's just kind of like the real Steve Sipes right there. The other one is just kind of the boring workaholic Steve Sipes. And then we have Hooks on the Radio, which is the Hooks Twitter.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've seen that one. Yep.
Yeah, twitter.com/Hooks on the Radio, which is the, and there's a bunch of other stuff, but I'm not even going to get into that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I tell you what, we're going to, this is going to be a fun interview just to kind of roadmap it for people. We're going to get into your background just briefly because you've had some cool gigs for sure. We're going to be talking radio imaging production, and then we're going to also be talking a lot about jingle production. We're also going to bring your lovely wife on a little later on, as she is a mighty successful voiceover chick.
She'll be our co-host.
Right.
Of the wacky Ryan on the Radio program.
Yes. Let's go back in time. Now, just tell me briefly, what was your very first gig in radio?
My very first gig on radio was I worked at a radio station in Springfield, Massachusetts, WHYN-FM. And it's funny how I got that gig. I actually was a roller skating rink DJ. And the guy that was the program director of that station, WHYN, he was also a jock. He came out to the roller skating rink while I was doing one of those, you know, Saturday afternoon skate session things. And, you know, he kind of heard me on the mic and all that stuff, and heard some production, because we actually had, this is kind of funny, and I wonder if Chris Corley remembers this or not. We had sweepers for the roller skating rink that were voiced by Corley. and because the rink was owned by an ex-radio guy, mm-hmm. who turned businessman and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so, you know, we had some sweepers on I guess you could say on the air, within the roller skating rink that I had produced. And, you know, I got to talking to this guy, and he literally offered me a job on the spot. And I started working at WHYN. I replaced Delilah. I was a night jock, and I got into doing some imaging for the station, and it just kind of...
You know, it's a damn shame. It's a damn shame that Delilah had to get replaced by you.
I'm sure a lot of 40-year-old moms were pissed off when they turn on the radio one night and they hear this squeaky 20-year-old guy on the air go, "Hey, what's up, Mix 93.1? Best mix of the 80s, 90s, and today."
Out of curiosity, this is about in the 95-ish region. When is this?
No, it was a little after. I graduated high school in 95. And
okay.
I did the roller skating rink gig for a couple, I think a year or something too. So probably like 96, 97 around that time.
Okay, so you got your big break. You stayed there.
Yeah.
Basically, how long did you stay there, and what was it that finally sent you off into your big time job?
Well, I was there for about 3 years, and honestly, you know, I wanted to move up in the radio world. It was definitely a passion of mine. I worked my ass off every night. I mean, I would just stay at that radio station all night working on stuff, but it was tough because I grew up in that town, so I was leaving a lot behind mm-hmm. by moving on. But there's just some gigs that come along that it's just, you know, you just got to do it. And that gig for me was KSLZ in St. Louis, Z1077. It was a station I had admired for a really long time. It was that station and FLZ were the two stations that I just really, really loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had tried to hire me a couple times. Jeff Capucci had called me on more than one occasion. It's just, it never kind of worked out. It was just never right. Because
mm-hmm.
I had my heart set on being the imaging director of Z.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some production gigs that would open up here and there for Z in the commercial department. And then there was one for their country station. That was imaging. But again, it wasn't Z imaging director. So it took them three tries before we finally had the right gig that just made me go, you know, I'm amazing. I can't turn this down. I got to go.
Yeah.
And that was the imaging director for Z. And I went there in, I think, like 2000, 2001. And that was really where I was able to kind of find my own niche as far as, you know, find who I was, I guess, as an imaging director, because they just let me cut loose. So I did a lot of experimenting at that radio station and, you know, did some lame stuff in the beginning, but as I kind of got better and, kind of honed my skills, Z turned out to be just a great gig and still to this day, a lot of great imaging work that I did. That, you know, people say, "Oh man, I really love this," or "I love that promo," or "I love that thing you did." It was from Z.
Okay, great. So you're at a kind of the station for you. Like you mentioned FLZ, we've definitely brought up FLZ many times on this podcast.
Yeah, FLZ and KSLZ had a really unique relationship. They were like family, you know.
Yep.
KSLZ was FLZ's sister station. So, you know, we were very involved, and we ran their morning show, and so the two stations were really involved, and I used to talk to Eric Chase and stuff, and you know, we'd go back and forth about imaging and those sorts of things, and
mm-hmm.
So it was a really neat place to work. It was kind of like getting the best of both worlds, you know?
In fact, let me bring up our first listener sent in question. And, you know, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to give the person who sent this a fake name
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to. Let me call him Nick Daly.
Yes. Okay. My good buddy, Nick.
Let me just call
Nicky.
Him that. He actually just says this. And I don't even know if this is a great story for the podcast, but ask him about the LL Cool J ID on the Clear Channel imaging site. I'm sure he'll remember.
Yeah. It's funny because Nick has been, it's weird. It's so old, that story, but Nick has been lately IMing me and emailing me and bringing it up in conversations. Oh, remember the LL Cool J thing? Now I know why.
Yeah, right.
No, Nick and I are really good friends, and we've been good buds for a long time, and we would always do stupid stuff, and I think he was looking for an artist drop sometime, and I sent him some, I said, "Hey, oh yeah, man, I got it," and it was just, it's not really that great of a story. It was me doing, I think, some weird sound, like a...
Mm-hmm.
Or it might have been me going, yeah, what's up, yo? Yeah. This is LL Cool J, yo. I don't remember. It was so long ago.
Mama said, "Knock him out."
Yeah, it was something stupid like that. But you know, it's just one of those things that giggled like little girls afterwards.
And in fact, we can talk about this. Clear Channel started something called the Ear Awards, and what did that have to do with you?
I was the first guy to win the imaging portion of that award.
And they would you win like 50, 60 bucks?
Yeah. I won 10,000 buckaroos, buddy.
I know.
Yeah, and I used that, and it's funny, I used that to finance the beginnings of my my home studio, and then I left the company and was like, "Hey, thanks for the money, guys, I'm out."
Right, it is.
It kind of does look that way, because literally, dude, after I won that award, it was like a month or two later, it was like, "Okay, I'm done, see you guys." Started my own company.
Yeah, that is kind of ironic.
No, I had a great run in that company. I really did. I have no, you know, I look back on it with, I have fond memories. Actually, going back to that earworm thing, though, you know what station I won that for? It wasn't for KSLZ. It was for the imaging I did for Q102 in Philadelphia.
Oh.
And I had never even stepped foot into Philadelphia before. I was doing that the imaging for that station from my house, my home studio in St. Louis.
Talk about that real quick, then. So you're at SLZ, Z, and how did the Q102 gig come up? Were you doing it concurrently with?
No, I was at Z, and that was when I started to kind of have these thoughts of, you know, I want to do something different. And a few people knew about that I was thinking about leaving and just kind of doing my own thing. And before I was able to do that, Todd Shannon called me, and he was the PD at Q at the time. And he was like, basically the sales pitch, why I want you to come work for me, all that kind of stuff. And it was cool. And I always liked Todd, and I just didn't want to live in Philadelphia. I had no desire to move there. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, that's not a deal breaker. Just do it from your studio in St. Louis. I was like, really? He's like, yeah. And I was like, all right. And that's what I did it was a very short-lived stint, but it was about a year. And ultimately, it still wasn't enough to really keep me happy. I needed to be making music and doing what I'm doing now, especially this Hooks thing. It was something that I just needed to get out there, that it was a long, long time in the making. So
this it's like 2005-ish, and you're going to be done with Q, and you're going to go off on your own at this point?
I think it was maybe 2006.
Okay.
Maybe it was summer of 2006.
Okay, so
that thing ended, and you know, Clear Channel was great, man. They had offered me some pretty cool opportunities after that to get me to stay in the company. I mean, like I said, I have no bad. I know a lot of people have tough time with corporate radio, but I had a really good run with that company, and you know, after Q ended, there were opportunities to stick around and do some stuff for other radio stations, but this is what I wanted to do. So it had to happen.
And would you say that you're, this is something that I think in general people know, but, you know, mm-hmm. who you know helps you almost more sometimes than kind of what you can do, because let's say there's a lot of people that can do a certain thing. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is the fact that you were with Clear Channel for so long and so many people got to know your skills, has that opened a lot of doors for
yeah.
you later?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I think, it's not how you get the opportunity. It's what you do when you get
yeah.
it. It doesn't matter how many people you know. If you're not any good, you're not any good.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing with Clear Channel, which was great, is that, listen to me, I sound like the poster boy for Clear Channel Radio. Hi, I'm Steve Sykes here, and I just love, but no, seriously, I mean, Clear Channel with the imaging site thing was really cool because it allowed me to make a lot of friends at radio stations all across the country just by, you know, talking about, you know, some promo I posted, or maybe some PD would email me and go, hey, can I have a mix out of that with this? Or they'd say, oh, I heard that promo that you did on the imaging site. Could you do some custom stuff for me? And it just kind of, you know what I mean? Like that kind of exposure was allowed me to make these contacts and kind of take the whole networking to a whole different level. So it was nice when I went out on my own because, you know, I had all those guys that I was already working with
yeah.
from back in the day that were like, well, what are you doing now? Well, I'm doing this thing called Hooks by Steve Sykes and you should check it out. And, you know, it kind of worked out.
So as we get into part two, it's going to be a lot more of the techie talk and the nerd
yeah.
stuff. But
I like techie nerd stuff.
Yeah, well,
I'm a techie nerd.
Yeah, I know. I know you just well enough to know that you are an absolute nerd.
I am,
but
and damn proud.
For now, I want to stay a little more general and talk mm-hmm. about your learning process over time, because you know you were producing radio imaging first, and eventually, I mean, I know you're a musician, at least you know.
Yeah, well,
in some ways, right?
Yeah, but I'm a musician all the way. I mean, I was always a musician first and an imaging guy second. And if you listen to some of my old stuff, you could kind of hear that there's a lot of musical stuff that I would do with my production, especially for Z. Right off the bat, I mean, this Hooks thing kind of started, it started at Z back in 2001. It wasn't officially called Hooks back then, but it was, you know, let's put some musical elements on the air that don't sound like jingles,
right.
that sound more like kind of pop stuff. So we do that, and then I do a lot of kind of singy stuff for promos, you know, like kind of punk rocky things, or
mm-hmm.
sometimes we do some rappy stuff, or It was always something I tried to incorporate into my production, simply just because I love music. You know, I'm obsessed with it.
And would you do a lot of the sings for yourself?
Music is so effective. It really is. What was that? I'm sorry.
Well, would you do a lot of the sings for yourself?
You know, I would do stuff for Z, you know, some of the more punky stuff.
Yeah. Because I remember some of this stuff.
Yeah, I could get away with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like if I needed to do something else, I wouldn't be the guy for it. I would bring in, you know, a professional singer and I'd say, all right, this is what I want you to do. Kind of sing it like this. And then we'd work out harmonies if we needed them and all these other things. But I would I make all the music myself.
For people that are thinking about these kinds of elements and that would like to add more musical elements to their imaging,
mm-hmm.
What did you have to have some sort of a budget, or were you just kind of asking these people as friends to come in and sing something for you?
Well, you know, it was interesting. Some cases it was, maybe it was a listener I met that, you know, happened to have a really good voice. And I said, hey, you want to come to my studio and try some stuff out? And, you know, it would just kind of work out. In other cases, it would be a friend of a friend would say, oh, I'm working with this girl and she's really good. And we'd kind of find some money and get her in the studio and you know, pay her
okay.
to come in and do the job. It was kind of a mishmash of different ways in the early days to get these things together. Nowadays, it's a professional operation. I hire people. We put them on a schedule and, you know, we have contracts and all that sort of stuff. A lot of times I would pay, if I had to pay him, I would pay him out of my pocket.
Yeah, no, you know? I think people, I was going to compare some of the stuff you were doing there a little bit with what Frost does. You know, some of the sings that he does for Frostbites,
mm-hmm.
you know, they sound awesome and professional, but I don't know that John Frost is actually a potentially Grammy Award winning vocalist.
Well, he's a pretty talented guy.
He's very talented. But anyway, there's... Which is going to lead me to my next point, but there's limitations that you can get around. And
absolutely.
What are some of the techniques that you used to learn to get around any, you know, basically your learning process?
My learning process was, in the beginning, was ask Eric Chase what he was doing mm-hmm. and try to emulate it. But the problem with that is there's no magic setting. And Eric was always great. You know, in my early days of imaging, you know, he was a really great guy, to a resource to just talk to and ask questions. And that was kind of my resource in the early days. And then I started to realize, wow, you know, these settings or whatever, they just doesn't work for everything, because there's no magic EQ or a compression setting. Because what happens is, just because, say, that EQ and compression and whatnot setting works on, say, I don't know, like Chris Corley's voice, for instance, doesn't mean it's going to sound great on my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's going to sound great on Frost's voice. You know what I mean? Like, it's all dependent on what these plugins are dependent on what you're sending into them. And that was kind of something I started to learn, is that, you know, you got to really experiment. There's no right or wrong. There's no, like I said, magic settings. It's all a matter of what sounds good to you. So then I started to kind of tweak a little bit more, to kind of get rid of these boundaries I set for myself. Because, you know, I had this like set of rules in my head, like, oh, well, you can't boost or cut any more than 5 decibels with an EQ. I think I read that somewhere once. And as you know, I'm sure that's a fine rule to go by in some cases. But, you know, I'm sorry, there were instances where I had something that just did not sound good until I cut 10, 12 dB of some low mid frequency out of it. Or in other cases, you know, I ended up doing this gigantic, huge slope of EQ on the high end or something. And it worked. So I started to realize, man, it's a matter of what sounds good to you. You could ask all the guys you want what settings work best, but when it comes down to it, you really need to just experiment, start twisting knobs, maybe even research online, look up EQ, find out what an EQ is, how it works, what frequencies affect what, create what type of sounds, and you know what I mean, like that type of stuff. That's really how I started to learn, you know, because then mm-hmm. by that process I started to realize, okay, if I do this, it's going to sound like this. If I do this, it's going to sound like that. Not exactly all the time, but there are certain characteristics to doing certain things that are somewhat consistent. You kind of have an idea. If I take 1 kilohertz, right, and I crank it all the way up, it's going to have this kind of thing like this going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I started to realize these things just by experimenting around and sweeping EQs and things like
that. No, that's good that I let you go, because this is the stuff people want to hear. You know, I think the biggest thing to take away from that, though, is the rules thing. Because I know for me, I've been doing this just long enough to know I have a lot of rules.
Yeah.
And I get stuck in my templates. You know,
yeah, I have
a template set up. You know, I use Jude Corbett on KSCS, and I've got that template that I've got so many things locked in on this thing now that, you know, I almost feel like some days I just want to throw it away and start from scratch. But then comes in the time factor.
Yeah. Well, templates are good. I still use templates with when I do music. I have templates in the sense of I have a bunch of tracks set up with, you know, okay, this is going to be my track where I'm going to put drums. This is going to be my track where I'm going to put bass. This is going to be my track where I'm going to put some synths. This will be the track where I do vocals. And I'll have specific routing set up. I don't have any plugins or anything on any of these tracks.
Okay.
Little things like that. And I think templates are good as time savers when it comes to, you know, getting started quickly. And honestly, as far as imaging goes, sometimes, you know, all you need... is a couple of I don't know, like I could see how a template can be useful in quick situations where, like, let's say all you have to do is get a couple sweepers on there,
right?
Like, there's a template. I could see how a template could be usable there, like really effective, because then it's like you could have all your EQs and everything ready to roll, and then all you have to do is just fine tune them, you know, just go through and adjust some levels here and there. So
And I think that what people should take away as well is that even if you do, like, I do have a template where my mastering plugs, every single VO track plug, every plug is there and set. You shouldn't be afraid to one day come in and be like, well, I got an extra hour or two on this promo. I'm going to start from scratch, or I'm going to wipe out all the plugins and just leave the routing there and then see what you can do.
Well, and the cool thing with having all your plugins there is that in some cases there are particular plugins that you just really like that you know you're going to use anyway. So it might as well have them all lined up and ready to go. I'll do that sometimes too. It's just I won't really have them set where they're touching the audio just yet. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'll have them ready, but then it's like, okay, let me start sending this sing into this compressor a little bit. Let's see how it sounds, and then I'll start going, do I want to keep that compressor there or not? Maybe I'll take it off and put a different one on, because there are different flavors of EQs and compressors and whatever, but. You know, so I definitely see the benefit of having a template with all your stuff set up. I just don't know necessarily if I would ever have all the settings kind of locked in, and then that's the way it's going to be, and I'm not going to tweak anything. It's just going to leave it like that, bounce it down, done. I mean, I guess it could work. I don't know.
Quick note at the end here to remind you about the show notes page. I think I mentioned, again, I did this interview like 2 days ago and I just don't remember what I said there, but I think I mentioned it. The show notes are full of good stuff, but I think they're going to be a lot more valuable to check out here during part two. Steve gave me a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of stuff, actually. There's some audio that goes with a screenshot that you can check out. Then there's a lot more screenshots. And you can also check out Steve's full jingle demo. I can't talk anymore. It's got to be it. Full jingle demo there on the show notes page, show notes entry for this podcast. That's where all that's going to go. All right. Part two coming.